probably the one single greatest cause for the deplorable condition in our country is the making of unwise decisions. Probably the single greatest cause for heartbreak and disappointment and depression of the people in this room tonight is that problem of decision making or wrong decision making or making decisions with a broken decision maker. Hardly a day passes that I do not receive at least one letter that says I made a decision when I shouldn't have made it, and because it was when I shouldn't have made it, I made a decision that I shouldn't have made. I got a letter yesterday. Well, read it yesterday. Young lady said, my husband and I came to Howells Anderson College. We had it rough. We got away from, well, we got in need, and because of that, we got discouraged. And we came back home, she said. And she said it was the worst thing we ever did. Worst thing we ever did. She said, would you have us back if we'd come back again? And would you forgive us if we came back again? Well, of course, there's nothing to forgive. And of course, 10,000 times we'll have them back. But the tragedy is, she said, we made the major decision, mistake of our lives. And I got three letters yesterday alone from somebody who said we made a decision and made it at the wrong time. We weren't qualified to make it at that time. And it really wrecked and ruined our lives and the lives of others. There are some times when you should not make a major decision. Let me say that again. There are some times when you should not make a major decision. I wonder how many fellows, you guys in the Navy, I don't know if any of you like this or not, but I wonder how many fellows have gone in the service because they got discouraged trying to find a job. And they didn't necessarily want to go in the service, but they just did. And have regretted it ever since. I wonder how many folks here tonight got married on the spur of the moment, made the decision under passion, and made a decision that has really adversely affected your life. Some even married the wrong person. Some married the right person too soon. But you made a decision unwisely while your decision maker was broken. Now all I'm going to do tonight, I'm not going to preach a real strong sermon. All I'm going to do tonight is tell you nine times when you shouldn't make a decision. Nine times. You know, we seem to associate problems and troubles with changes, with changing. Please look at me now. Write letters home after a while. Take notes some of the time, but do not write while I'm talking. I want you to look at me and listen to me. Everybody in this room has got a piece of paper and a pen, and looking down all the time I'm preaching, we won't have any kind of service at all. So I do want you to, when I preach, I want you to hear me. I've got some things to tell you. I think it's life or death, or I'd get out of this business. But we seem to associate problems and troubles with changing. Nothing could be further from the truth. Problems and troubles are just as much of God's preparation for us as sunshine and delights. Because something is not palatable doesn't mean you're supposed to leave. Doesn't mean you're supposed to change anything. But somehow that we have the idea that if the sun is not shining, we're supposed to move to where it is. We have the idea that if we can't find a job, we're supposed to move where we can find a job. We have the idea that if we are having troubles, we're supposed to move where there are no troubles. Well, brother, that place doesn't exist. You're going to find the same troubles that you have here where you go. They'll leave here and be waiting for you when you arrive. People are the same everywhere. Every once in a while, folks will ask me, in fact, this last week, somebody said, to the house, you travel across this country, Now, is there a difference in people across the country? No, not much. Not much. This thing about a southerner being this way and northern being that, highly exaggerated. Highly exaggerated. Some of the most southern acting people are up in New England. I mean, and some of the most northern acting people are down Mississippi. Don't ask me what I mean by southern acting, northern acting. I've got the foggiest idea. But I believe that people are the same everywhere, and you're going to have the same problems everywhere. There's nothing new under the sun. And listen, whether or not you have problems has nothing to do with whether you ought to stay or leave. Nothing whatsoever. Clouds are just as much a part of God's will as sunshine. Burdens are just as much a part of God's will as carefree days. But somehow, we got the idea, things don't go good, and of course we're God, so we can decide whether they're good or not. If things don't go like we think are good, then God must not be in it. Now you listen to me. God doesn't need you to decide what's good or bad. God, you get in God's will, and you love Him. And don't associate clouds with outside the will of God. God's will has sunshine, and God's will has clouds. God's will has noondays, and God's will has midnights. God's will has laughter, and God's will has tears. God's will has success, and God's will has failure. I'm saying that, so I want to give you 9 times tonight when not to make a major decision. 1, when discouraged or bereaved. When discouraged or bereaved. If a loved one's just died, don't make a major decision. If you're a senior citizen, which is 85 or over, but if your husband has passed away and you've been left a widow, don't you decide the first week after he's gone what you're going to do with your life. That's not the time to decide. That's the time to let your wounds heal and spend some time alone with God and think a while and meditate a while and just rest in the Lord for a while. And it's not the time to make any kind of major decision. Preachers especially are guilty of this. Preachers have problems and they say, "Dear Brother Hiles, I'm having trouble where I am, having some problems, and I believe my work is finished here." Now, you just don't talk like that. Your work is not finished because you have problems. It may be God sent you there to solve the problems. Your work is not finished because you have battles. It may be God sent you there to fight some battles. A battle doesn't mean it's not God's will. A problem doesn't mean it's not God's will. Unemployment doesn't mean it's not God's will. A heartache doesn't mean it's not God's will. I'm saying when you have a burden or a bereavement, do not make a major decision. Our story tonight, we read a while ago. Here's a man named Elimelech and a woman named Naomi. They have 2 boys, one named Mahlon and one named Chilion. they live in Bethlehem of Judah, and the famine is there, and unemployment is high, and it's hard to find jobs. And I can see Elimelech coming home night after night saying to his wife, "Naomi, honey, I tried. I can't find work. I don't know what we're going to do." And she said, "Well, how are we going to pay our bills? We've got to find work somewhere." "Oh," he said, "I hear they're hiring down in Moab." Let me tell you something else. Just because they're hiring somewhere doesn't mean you ought to go there. Well, he said, "Well, that fella's got to make a living. Would you show me verse and scripture and verse for that, please? Chapter and verse for that? All you've got to do is God's will." I said, "All you've got to do is God's will." I said, "All you're supposed to do is God's will." I said, "All you're supposed to do is God's will." Many a country preacher has lived a penury existence with not enough to pay his bills, hardly, and hardly enough to eat. But he stayed with the stuff for a lifetime with a little wife and some children that have almost gone hungry. And some of the greatest Christians I've ever known were those preachers like that. Don't you associate prosperity with the will of God. "Well, God sure has been good to me. We have a good job. We have a nice house. We have a good car. Everybody's well. God sure has been good to me." God's good to you if you don't own a house and the kids have all got chicken pox and you ride a bicycle instead of a car and you're unemployed. God's still good to you. Don't you equate the goodness of God with your own judgment. You let God decide what's good for you. "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. All these things should be added unto you." What God is saying is simply this. God is saying, if we'll be in His will, all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are in His will. Now, it may be some of those things don't taste good. It may be some don't feel real good. It may be it won't be tingle. Won't all be sunshine. Won't all be noontime. Won't all be daylight. Won't all be fair weather. It may be burdens and heartaches and problems. But God's will is not determined by how good you feel. So they took Naomi and Elimelech. They took their boys. And they left the will of God, Bethlehem, Judah. The will of God for them at that time was to live in the land while there's a famine in the land. God was punishing the people because of sin, and they're running from punishment, like a little kid running from daddy that's going to spank him. I'm going to spank you. Kid takes off out front door, runs next door, and you can't get him. I'm going to get you. And the kid, that's exactly what most Christians are. God said, I'm going to spank you because spank the people because they've been in sin. And the old Elimelech said, we got to run. We got to run to Moab. Well, God's got switches in Moab, too. God's got razor straps in Moab. And by the way, God lives in Moab, too, in case you'd like to know. And he'll meet you there when you get there. They left the will of God. They had a broken decision maker. They left the will of God. Went down to Moab. Naturally, their boys met heathen girls. And Malan married a heathen girl. And Chilion married a heathen girl. And then Malan died. And Chilion died. And Elimelech died. And Naomi was left with her two daughters-in-law. And then after 10 years, see, everybody goes into sin just for a while. The Bible says they went to sojourn in Moab. Sojourn means to pass through. Make enough to get our bills paid and then we'll come back. That's garbage. That's pagan talk. That's heathen talk. And so they said, we'll come back. That's what everybody does. You just intended to spend one night in a parked car and you ended up pregnant before you got married. You just intended to take one little cocktail when the crowd was there and you were ashamed to stand up for Jesus, end up an alcoholic. You just intended to take one little smoke of pot and see how it was, or one little shot, see how it was, ended up an addict. If you don't want to stay in Moab, don't you go to Moab. They went down to sojourn and they stayed. And one day, Malan was taken by death. And they went out and dug a hole and placed his body in it. And one day, Chilion died. And Naomi went out and laid Chilion beside Malan. And one day, her husband, Elimelech, died. And now there are three graves in Moab. And Naomi decides to go back home after 10 years. She goes back to Bethlehem. People say, who's that? And she said, they said, is that Naomi? Is that Naomi? They couldn't even recognize her because of what being outside the will of God had done to her and for her. She said, don't call me Naomi anymore. Naomi means pleasant. Call me Mara because Mara means bitter. Now, why is Malan's body beneath the sod? Why is Chilion's body beneath the sod? Why is Elimelech buried in Moab? And why is Naomi not even recognizable? And why is her life wrecked and ruined? I'll tell you why. The same reason some of you are wrecking your lives tonight. You're making decisions of a lifetime, and you're not in any shape to make those decisions. Oh, I wish I could grab some people tonight and shake some sense into your heads, going off half-cocked and making some stupid, foolish decisions when your decision-maker is broken and you're looking through through dark glasses and you're looking at life with a decision-maker that's not qualified to make a decision because you're discouraged. Remember Abraham and Sarah? There was a famine in the land. Abraham and Sarah said, we'll go down to Egypt and we'll get work down there. They went down to Egypt, and while in Egypt, they did get prosperous. They even could afford a maid. They were in Brazil. And they could afford a maid. And they had this maid, little maid named Hagar. They went back to the promised land after they heard that things are okay back up there. And carried Hagar with them. They wouldn't have known Hagar if they hadn't left the will of God. They hadn't made a decision when they shouldn't have made a decision. And made a decision with a broken decision maker. They wouldn't have known Hagar. What happens? Abraham gets Hagar pregnant. She has a baby named Ishmael. And from Ishmael came all the... Listen, you want to know what the problem is in Iran? It's not Mr. Reagan's problem. It's when Abraham and Sarah made a decision with the decision maker broken. Right.
be any problem in Iran. Look at me. Listen to me. Young people, college students, hear what I've got to say. I got something to say to you. Quit making notes. Look at me. In God's dear name, the whole Eastern problem, the Iran problem, the Lebanon problem, the Jordanian problem, all of it is caused because one couple made a decision thousands of years ago with a broken decision maker. You want to know why we have hostages held tonight? Abraham and Sarah made a decision, a broken decision maker. You want to know why we have the constant war between the Arabs and the Jews? One land? Why? Because God had promised Abraham that his seed would have the promised land for an everlasting possession. And Abraham's first son was named Ishmael. And he's the father of the Arabs, half Egyptian and half Jew. And he says, the land is mine. God promised the land to Abraham's seed. It's mine. I'm his firstborn. Isaac, the son of promise, said, it's my land. That's the Jew. He says, it's my land because I am the promised seed. Ishmael said, no, the firstborn gets the inheritance. Israel is mine. Palestine is mine. Isaac said, no, the son of promise. I'm the miracle son. Born to my father when he was 100 and my mother when she was 90. I'm the miracle son. It's mine. Ishmael said, I can stake a claim to it. And by the way, he can. And Isaac said, I can stake a claim to it. And by the way, he can. And the land does belong to Isaac and the Jews. It does belong to the Israel and the Arabs. And they'll be fighting as long as there's a world here. They'll be fighting for that one land. It'll never cease. It'll never end. Why? Called Abraham and Sarah made a decision with their decision maker broken. Folks, why don't you listen to what I say? Why don't you pay some attention to what's preached here? I've been preaching this for 27 years here. I like to die this week when a half a dozen people came to my office. You won't believe the things I heard this week from people came to my office and said, preacher, we should listen to you. Well, why don't you listen then? Don't make a decision when you're discouraged and depressed. That'll affect your whole life. You're not qualified to make that decision then. I remember one of my dearest preacher friends when I was a young man. He got discouraged. Well, what pastor doesn't get discouraged? I often say the only difference in Lee Robertson, who spent 40 years at Highland Park Baptist Church in Chattanooga, the only difference in Lee Robertson and fellows that wash out, is when he came to the same problem you faced, he stayed when you quit. That's what I say to preachers. That's the only difference. You think, well, Dr. Robertson never had any problems. He had the same one every other preacher has that makes him quit. Same ones. But he stayed. Why? Because when things are going good, he didn't want to leave. When things are going bad, he wasn't qualified to decide to leave. This preacher, think about right now, one of my dearest friends, I was a young preacher, had a church where he should have pastored for years. It was just made for him. And one Sunday, while he was discouraged, he used that broken decision maker and decided to resign his church. And from that day to this, he's never had a church of any consequence. He's never had a ministry that was blessed. He got out of the perfect will of God for his life. Why? Because when he was depressed and on a low level and discouraged and defeated, he decided he was going to leave. Don't do that. Don't do it. Listen, don't you decide, oh, things are going bad. I've got to make some changes. First place, the fact that things are going bad, you don't know whether things are going bad or not. When you think they're going bad, you're going to find out one of these days they may have been going better than they ever did. You let God decide what's good for you and what's bad for you. My Bible said, delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. He will tell you what to desire, and then he'll give you what you do desire. Let God decide your desires. Let God decide what's best for you. And you just obey him. And then all of a sudden when things get down to the bottom, don't say, oh, I'm going to throw things up and leave and quit and change. Don't you do that. You stay right where you are while your decision maker is broken.
Number two, don't make a decision, a major decision, when backslidden. A fella said to me this the other day. He said, Dr. Towns, I don't know if I'm called to preach or not. He said, I said, well, did you ever think you were? He said, yes, I did. I said, do you think you are now? He said, don't know. I said, okay, you've got to figure out one thing. When were you the best Christian? Were you a better Christian when you thought you were called to preach, or are you a better Christian now that you don't know? He said, I was a better Christian when I thought I was called to preach. I said, I'd preach. Yeah. Yeah, I'd trust them a decision when the decision maker was in good shape. Yeah. Never undo in doubt what you do in faith. Often I've used this illustration. I say often, probably 8 or 10 times through these years. When I wrestled for weeks and weeks and even months about whether to come here or not, back in 1959, my soul was grieved. I wrestled with that thing, and I wrestled and wrestled, and I didn't want to leave my native state of Texas. And I wrestled with that thing, and my heart died 1,000 times. And finally, and I won't go into it, but finally, God let me know I was supposed to come to Hammond, Indiana, First Baptist Church. Do you know, I resigned my church, and as I've said often, I've never seen a service like that. It was the most unusual service I've ever been in my life. I stood up on a Wednesday night, and my people didn't have the foggiest idea I was going to leave. They didn't have the foggiest idea. And I got up and I said, God has called me to First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana. And that's all I said. I said, I'm resigning effective in 30 days. When I said that, the whole crowd broke out in uncontrollable sobbing. I'd been there for almost 7 years, but it's a little different than just 7 years. When I went there, 44 people were there. Now we had over 4,000 members. We'd grown up together, most of them about my age. They thought we were there to grow up the rest of our lives together. And all of a sudden, the service was just stopped. And people went over to the walls and put their head and their arms like that on the walls and began to cry uncontrollably. And they screamed. Then they came to the altar and cried out loud. And we couldn't sing. We couldn't pray. We couldn't have a Bible study. Folks went outside and were outside crying and weeping. And you never saw anything like it in your life. Well, the minute that happened, I thought, now God must not be in this. And do you know that I doubted that I'd made the right decision? Immediately. And you know, from that moment forward, I thought I'd made the wrong decision. The next day, I wanted to say to my people, I've made the wrong decision, and I'm going to stay. And the next day, and the next day, and when we left to come up here on August 23rd, 1959, and left, I did not know at that moment that God was in it, but I knew that I thought back yonder a month ago that God was in it, and I wasn't willing to trust a broken-hearted decision maker when the decision was made back yonder a month ago with a good decision maker. Look, you don't have to decide every day whether God led you where you are or not. You decide the first day and you just forget it. You give God your name and phone number and say, here I am. And don't you let a bunch of circumstances, if the clouds come, live through the clouds. If the heartaches come, live through the heartaches. The burdens come, live through the burdens. Don't make a decision when backslidden. Never undo in doubt what you did in faith. Number three, don't make a major decision when homesick. I want to say this, and I'm not talking just to the college students, but I do want to just put a little sentence or two to the college students. You're not the first college student ever got homesick. There was another one back in 1938 that got homesick too. But I want to tell you something. Home is not there anymore. What you left is no longer there. I see a couple grinning right down here sitting on the fifth row. Saw them grinning, looking at each other then. They came to Hiles Anderson College. They thought it was the will of God. Had some tough times. They did. They had some really rough times. I mean, he beat her every morning before breakfast. they left. And by the way, they left like everybody leaves. They don't come by and check with me. They say, we knew what you'd say. You coward, you. They wrote me a letter. Said, Brother Hiles made a wrong decision. We want to come back. And they came back and swallowed their pride and got back in the will of God, and I admire them for it. But homesick is not there. It'll never be like it was when you were there before. You've changed since you left, and they've changed since. They say, well, this church is not the same. No, you're not exactly the same either. Oh, I got so discouraged. Oh, I wish my mother had never done that. My mother, for years, kept a scrapbook for me. And when she died, she left it to my sister. My sister hated me, and she gave it to me or something. And I got that thing in my office. And I'll tell you what, that's the most discouraging thing to look at I've ever seen in my life. I look at those pictures and hold them up. I've done it. Hold them up beside the mirror, and I'd say, that's not the same fella. It's just not the same fella. I mean, I've just improved so much, and I look so much better than I did. I'm so much more handsome than I was. But nothing is the same. You can't go back. You can't go back. I'm pressing on the upward way. New heights I'm gaining every day. Still praying as I onward bound. Lord, plant my feet on higher ground. And if you're backslidden or burdened or heartbroken or homesick, don't make a decision. You decision makers not in good shape. Number four, don't make a decision of major consequence when you're scared. He had stolen his brother's birthright. He had stolen his brother's blessing from what they thought was the deathbed of his father. Little old sissy soup-stirring Jacob had cheated his brother Esau out of what was Esau's. And Esau said, I'll get him! I'll get him! Jacob, being a mommy's boy, went to mama, and mommy said, Sonny boy, I think you ought to leave. He'll kill you. I'd rather die in the will of God. I said, I'd rather die in the will of God. I said, I'd rather die in the will of God. Give us some old-fashioned Christians who say, I'd rather give my life in God's will. Suppose that Adoniram Judson had said, well, we're having it tough. I guess it must not be the will of God. India would never have heard the gospel. Suppose David Livingston had said, well, it must not be God's will. I'm having it tough. Then the African jungles would never have been blazed and the trails never blazed. Why? It does not mean it's not the will of God because you've got some pain. Harold Seitler laid his little 9-year-old daughter to rest in the will of God. Lee Robertson laid his little baby to rest in the will of God. J. Harold Smith laid his son who burned to death to rest in the will of God. John R. Rice laid his mother to rest in the will of God. And Dr. Bill Rice had a deaf daughter in the will of God. Dr. George W. Truett accidentally shot his best friend in the will of God. Charles Haddon Spurgeon was sick in the will of God and had to go down to Mentone, France for months and months at a time. And his wife was an invalid in the will of God. I was up at Maranatha Baptist Bible College for my 19th consecutive year, just a few weeks ago. President of that college is named Arno Winninger, Jr. If I listed the most 10 admirable men in America, or couples in America, I'd list that couple. Dr. John Rice and I were together one time in a meeting when Arno Winninger, Jr. was pastor over in Normal, Illinois. That's the meeting where I saw the ad in the paper. There's a little town called Oblong, Illinois, and had a little an ad, but an article said oblong boy to marry a normal girl, or oblong girl to marry a normal boy. Anyway, he was in Normal, Illinois, and while we were there, Dr. Winninger came one time and said, Dr. Rice, would you and Dr. Hiles come over after the service and have some fellowship, and would you pray with my wife? She's not well. We don't know all that's wrong with her. We went over there after the service, and she had some symptoms of a bad disease, and finally, as a young lady, still, I think still in her 20s, late 20s, maybe 30. I don't think she was 30. They diagnosed it as multiple sclerosis. And sometimes it's not as bad as others, but in her case, it's been about as bad as it can be. And every year I've gone to preach for him or seen him around the country. It's been a little bit worse. And now for years, that his wife, they have a house built on the campus there. And by the way, at pastor school one year, we bought one of these little chairs you put on the stairs, motorized chairs, you know what I'm talking about, and for her so she could go up the stairs, and they have it there in the house. But she can't use the chair anymore. Now for several years, she's never been outside the house. She lays there on her back, an invalid. And I occasionally go by. When I'm there, I'll go by to see her. And Dr. Winiger, all these years, had to care for her like she was a baby. And she wants to be a good wife, but she can't. And she wants to help, but she can't. And somebody else does the cooking, and somebody else does the housework, and she's practically paralyzed. Multiple sclerosis has taken its toll. You think Dr. Winiger said, well, I guess I'm not supposed to be a preacher. Nothing's gone well for me. That's your reasoning, but that's not his, thank God. That's not his, thank God. Don't make a decision when you're backslidden. Don't make a major decision when you're discouraged and bereaved. Don't make a major decision when you're homesick. Don't make a major decision when you're scared. So Jacob left the will of God and went down 500 miles away to the old homeland. And 20 long years he stayed and wasted 20 years of his life. Why? Because he was scared and his decision maker was clouded. And with that decision maker broken, Jacob made a decision. Wrecked his life. Came back years later, back to Bethel, but never was the same. Don't make number five, don't make a major decision when you're ill. Number six, don't make a major decision when you're angry. When you're angry. I'm sick and tired of you. I'm gone. Well, you may be sick and tired, but stay. If all the women here that are sick and tired of their husbands left, we men could live in barracks together. Everybody gets mad, except me. And I get righteously indignant sometimes. But while you're mad, don't make a foolish decision. Cain lost his temper and got mad and killed his brother. A whole civilization was ruined. Barnabas got mad at Paul on the second missionary journey. Barnabas said, we've taken my nephew, John Mark, and Paul said he turned back last time, we're not going to take him. And Barnabas said, yes, we are. The Bible says there was no small strife and contention between them. And Barnabas said, okay, I won't go. If he doesn't go, I won't go. Boy, we have a lot of talk like that, don't we? That sort of sound like us. And so he took Silas. And you never hear from Barnabas anymore. Think what he could have done. Didn't he take Silas? Who did he take? He took somebody. The fact that I don't know who it is means it wasn't very important, because I'd have known it. If he'd have checked with me, he wouldn't have made that decision either. But the honest, simple truth is, think of all that Paul did. Think of Paul taking the gospel to Europe, to the Western world. Think of all the influence the Apostle Paul had. Are you listening to me? Barnabas could have enjoyed all of that if he hadn't made a decision while he was mad. Lost his temper, got mad, angry. Listen, when you're angry, your decision maker is broken. When you're depressed, your decision maker is broken. When you're homesick, your decision maker is broken. When you're scared, your decision maker is broken. When you're backslidden, your decision maker is broken. Number seven, don't make a major decision when you're enticed and when it's something you want to do. A committee came from Moab. They came to knock on the door of an evangelist, a Baptist preacher named Balaam. And they said, we want you to come down and preach for us. Well, anybody that knows the Bible knows you're not supposed to yoke up with unbelievers to preach anything. And Balaam said, I can't do it. They said, we want you to come. Come down. You can preach the truth. I don't care if you do preach the truth. You're not supposed to yoke up with the wrong crowd. And Balaam said, I can't do it. They went back home. They came back again. He said, Balaam, can we talk to you? He said, come on in. That's where he made the mistake. Somebody's trying to feed you some garbage or lead you outside the will of God. Don't invite them in. And don't you go in where they are. Be nice and courteous and say, good day. I'm busy. I've got something I've got to do. And so he said, come on in. They came in and said, Dr. Balaam. He said, no, I'm Reverend Balaam. Well, said, we're going to make you Dr. Balaam. Oh, we'll give you some honors if you'll come. And they told Balaam all they'd do for him. And they said, you can still preach the same message you preach here. And Balaam got all sucked in and enticed and made a decision. What did it do? It affected an entire race of people. He went down to Moab and got the children of God's people intermingled and intermarried with the heathen people, and God's people lost all of their uniqueness and they lost all their separation, and they had a bunch of little half-Jew, half-Moabite kids and a bunch of heathen kids, and a whole generation was destroyed. Why? Because one guy made a decision when he was enticed. His decision maker was broken. Now, I'm going to spend a little bit on number 8. I want young folks to listen to me. If you ever listen to a thing in your life, I want you to listen to what I'm going to say right now. Don't you make a decision when passionate. Don't you make a decision when passionate. Don't you decide to get married when she's her loveliest. You ought to propose when her hair is rolled up, and goo's on her face, and she's got a greasy bathrobe on. You ought not to propose when she's her prettiest. Don't propose when... Did you see that moon tonight? Boy, if you have... Listen, don't go out by pairs tonight. Some of you folks, if you go with your sweetheart out, look at that moon, the first thing you're going to do, your decision maker is going to get broken. I was driving toward the moon. Moon was over here. The sun was over here. Sun always sets in the west. You can make notes of that if you'd like. But as the sun was setting, it was shining on the moon. It was over here. And the moon was just gorgeous. I mean, it was yay big, and it was just gorgeous. Don't make a decision to get married when the moon's full. Propose when one of those skinny moons out there. And don't propose when it's 75 degrees and the wind is blowing gently. You're sitting on a park bench. Propose when you're on that same park bench when it's 15 below zero and 2 feet of snow on the ground. Many a person has married the right person at the wrong time because they made a decision when passion had broken their decision maker. Young couples, please, listen, I'm not saying your mom and dad ought to choose your mate for you, but I'm saying this, when you're just goo-goo about each other, you are in no shape to make the decision of your life. You're not. Wait till you un-goo. But you're in no decision to make the decision of your life. You're in no decision to make the shape of your life. Your life be in bad shape, you make that decision, I guarantee you. No, and by the way, you don't know somebody after 2 months enough to marry them. No, you don't. Oh, well, you say, I feel like I've known her all my life. Are you going to? And you'll feel like your life's been 50 years long after 6 months if you don't watch it too. I wish you'd listen to me. I wish I could take every young person here and beat this into your head. Don't decide when you're too young, not ready to get married. Don't let passion cause you to make a decision because your decision maker is broken. May I say this? Don't let impatience. Don't make a major decision while you're impatient. Abraham and Hagar Abraham and Sarah did that.
God had said, I'm going to give you a son someday. Well, 30-year-old Abraham said the 20-year-old Sarah, and I may be wrong on the ages here, God's going to give us a boy someday, and he's going to inherit the land and be the seed for the promised Messiah. 40-year-old Abraham said to 30-year-old Sarah, God's going to give us a son someday. Somebody said the other day, he said, they'll be 40 then pregnant. Talk to JoJo Moffat about that. She's both. But 50-year-old Abraham said to 40-year-old Sarah, God's going to give us a son someday. 60-year-old Abraham said to 50-year-old Sarah, God's going to give us a son someday. And Sarah said, pray tell me when. 70-year-old Abraham said to 60-year-old Sarah, God's going to give us a son someday. And Sarah said, it's too late for me, Buster. I didn't cross the deadline. She said, listen to this. She said, we better help God out. And Sarah herself said, why don't you take that little maid we brought back from Egypt? Don't be impatient. Don't make a decision when you're impatient. And she talked Abraham into taking that little Hagar, that little maid. And they were going to help God out. And Hagar did have a child. And the child was a boy. But that impatience is what I mentioned a while ago. It's caused heartache and heartbreak in that little old part of the world ever since. I'm talking about 2,000 years ago. It's causing trouble. And it's still causing trouble. And nobody's going to settle. No, the Republicans are not going to settle the Middle East crisis. And the Democrats are not going to settle the Middle East crisis. It's there, and it'll be there until the Battle of Armageddon is fought. When in the Battle of Armageddon, God will once again come in the person of His Son and put down the Antichrist and set up a kingdom and give that land to the Jews for an everlasting possession. But until God takes care of it Himself, it's not going to be settled. Why? Abraham and Sarah got impatient. And with a broken decision maker, they made a decision. But you say, Brother Hiles, I have a decision that must be made. I've got a decision. I've got to make it. My decision maker may be broken. I may be depressed. I may be discouraged. I may be bereaved or backslidden or homesick or scared or ill or angry or enticed or impatient or passionate. But I've got to make a decision. It's here and I've got to make it. No, you don't have to make it. If your decision maker is broken, you find somebody whose decision maker is healthy and let them make it for you. You go to bed emotionally, just like you would if you're too weak physically to work. You go to bed and somebody takes care of you and makes a decision for you. When you get sick and your decision maker or emotionally you're not qualified to make a decision, according to these things I've laid out tonight, emotionally go to bed. Don't do any work with your decision maker. Let someone else care for you. And you do what he says until yours is replaced. But a caution. I implied a while ago about this. Let someone else make the decision as to whose decision maker you're going to borrow. Because what you're going to do, your decision maker is broken like Rehoboam's was. And you're going to go to the young men and do what they do. But they got broken decision makers too. You'll find somebody that's going to advise you to do what you want to do anyway. And they haven't got a better decision maker when it's well than you have when yours is broken. Do what you do. Find some of these white-haired people. Find somebody that's been in the battle a long time. Same kind of battle that you're facing. And if your decision maker is broken, don't make a decision. You say, Brother Hiles, what upsets you about this so much? Because I live with it all the time. I live with it all the time. One guy came to Hiles Anderson College and he said, pressure's on all the time.
I'm 60 years old, and I've never seen the pressure let up yet. Pressure's on all the time. I'm just going to go back home. And so the broken decision maker, he made a decision that's going to wreck his life. Little married lady, the other day, one of our college wives, she said, I've had all I can take. So what did she do? Just ups and goes home. Are you listening to me? Takes the babies, goes home, backslidden, broken decision maker. Her life affected, his life affected, little baby's lives affected. Why? Broken decision maker. I'm always studying on probably 20 sermons. I've probably got 20 sermons right now I'm studying and working on. And I got 15 of them I'd rather preach than what I said tonight. But my heart's been heavy this week, in the last couple of 3 weeks, because people, not people that do what I think they should not do, but people that make decisions that they come back to me and said they think they should not have made those decisions. I don't have any more wisdom than most of you. I'm not smarter than most of you, but I work with people more than most of you. And I see what happens to people that make decisions under certain stimulus and stimuli. I see what happens. And I come to you and I say to you tonight, I say, when you're discouraged and defeated and the burdens are so heavy you can hardly face life, don't make a major decision. When a loved one's body is just cold in death and the grave is still warm, and the clothes have not been unpacked yet from the drawers or taken off the shelves or off the racks in the closet, don't make a decision that will affect your whole life. And when you've drifted back from God, not praying like you once did, and not soul winning like you once did, and not living in the book like you once did, don't make a decision, a major one. Or when you're homesick and all of a sudden... I remember when I first came to First Baptist, I'd sit up here on the platform and think about Miller Road Baptist Church in Garland. Wonder how they were doing. Wonder how many they had in Sunday school. I'd sit up here on the platform and cry because I was thinking about Miller Road, homesick as I could be. Don't make a decision when your heart's broken and you're about to die. You think you can't stand it because you've left home for the first time. Don't make a decision. Your decision maker's broken. When you get scared, you don't know which way to go, and you're afraid to face life, don't make a decision. Just hold still. Just be still. When you're angry, you've lost your temper, somebody's upset you, don't make a decision. Just be still. When you're enticed and the honors come and the opportunity for advancement comes, and all of a sudden, boy, you say, well, that's what I'd like to do. Wow, wouldn't I like to do that? No, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't make a decision then. Just be still. And when you're in love and you know she's the right one or he's the right one, and you wonder if you can go home another night without her, or you wonder if you can live another week without living together, don't make a decision then. Or when all of a sudden you can't see things developing as quickly as you want them to. When all of a sudden you want to see things move faster than they're moving, don't make a decision then. If you have to make a decision, if a decision must be made, you go to somebody who's wise. Somebody who's been through the trails, fought the battles, and seen thousands and hundreds of others. You go to them and say, what should I do? And it just may be that what they say will break your heart. And it may be you'll be the loneliest person in all the world and the saddest person, the most bereaved person. And it may be the burden you bear will be the heaviest burden in the whole world as far as you're concerned. But you just go ahead and do what he says. You take his advice and you do it. But don't decide yourself whose decision maker you borrow. You ask somebody else to help you decide whose decision maker you borrow. Life is filled with decisions. Where shall I go to college? Whom shall I marry? Where shall I work? How about children? What town? In what town should I live? What church should I attend? Life's made on decisions. And those decisions are so vital and so important. If you make a mistake on any one of them, it could wreck your life and the lives of others. Wrecked the whole nation when Balaam made the wrong decision. Wrecked the whole civilization for several thousand years when Abraham made the wrong decision. Took two boys in death, a husband in death. Wrecked the lives of several people when the Naomi and Elimelech made the wrong decision. Just don't do it. Just be still. I just want to tonight, I want to hug some of you and say, be still. I know the load's heavy. I know. Got a letter this last week from the Wolf, Dan Wolf and his wife. Little child. What disease is it? I've forgotten all of a sudden. Little child has... Oh, it's what is it? Anyway. And then Dan with his hook for an arm. But he's just sitting still. Are you listening to me now? I really would like for you to. Just sit still. Just keep on doing what you decided to do when your decision maker was in good shape. And I want to say this in closing. God loves you. And I don't believe God's going to make you, if you're sincere, I don't think He's going to make you have to make that decision until you can get your decision maker back right again. The day's going to come when the sun's going to shine again. The clouds are going to part. And the sun's going to rise again. So you, while it's dark, just sort of sit still. The blackest cloud I've ever seen is coming across the Texas plains. You can see that little funnel as it hangs down there and goes round and around. And you get up on top of the house, as I've done often, and I've seen it as it takes its path, makes its path of terror. And Mom would say, son, we better go to the storm cellar. A lot of you folks don't know what those are. Storm cellar. What's a storm cellar? Storm cellar is a hole back in the backyard with steps that went down into that hole. And there's a big hump. You can always tell where it was because the ground came up like this and the door slanted like that. You went, open, pulled the door up like that. It started slanted like that. And you pulled it up, walked down those steps to keep from getting killed by a storm. And you got killed with a rattlesnake that's down there in the storm cellar. And we go down and sit in the storm cellar. And oh, the storm was raging. Mom would say, son, just sit still. Just sit still. We didn't make any decisions while the storm was raging. We just sat there. Now's not the time to make a decision. And then all of a sudden it was quiet. And Mom would open the storm cellar and look out. The storm had passed. She said, son, it's okay now. It's okay. The storm's going to pass. Just sit still till it does. Our Father, I don't know when I preached the sermon I wanted to help anybody more with than this one. I pray you'd work in the hearts of many people tonight. There are a heap of people in this room right now are saying, oh my soul, why didn't I listen to him? It's too late for them. But there's some for whom it's not too late. And I pray your blessing upon them. Avert and avoid tragedy tonight. Speak to the hearts of the people.